We're in chapter 11 of 2 Corinthians. Paul continues his a second defense of himself after the early part, and then the section on the stewardship, and as we were looking in chapter 10. Excuse me. And in the first few verses of chapter 11, it takes on a little different flavor as he starts to describe his stature as an apostle, or the various things to rank him or distinguish him as an apostle. And there's, as we look through it, you'll see there's a couple of ways to understand a one part of this. Paul very obviously in one is being sarcastic, but then the question for another part is he being sarcastic or not in that part, and that does change the way that you see that. It doesn't really change the overall aspect of what he's doing, but it does change the immediate sense. But he begins, he says, "I wish that you would bear with me in a little foolishness. But indeed you are bearing with me." Paul has just completed a section where he's been saying that the idea of boasting is pretty stupid unless you're going to boast in God. Commending ourselves and setting ourselves up as a standard, and then saying, "There, see, we met our standard," doesn't prove much. And that's what his reference is here, bear with me in a little foolishness. Bear with me as I'm going to boast a little bit. But obviously, if they're reading, they're bearing with him that far. So he has a little bit of humor in these areas also. But his boasting, even though he does boast about being an apostle in some sense, it's different. It's not for his own purpose. It's always for the Corinthians' well-being, and it's established in God. Verse 2, he begins, there's really three defenses he makes right here, three statements. And they all, in the numeric standard, always begin with the word "for." In verse 2, it begins that way in verse 4, and then in verse 5. How does yours begin in those verses? Okay. Okay. They're the same word in Greek, which is just an introductory word that gives a causal sense. So for, because of, something like that would be the more typical. But it is in this parallel sense that he's laying out these three arguments at this point. So first he says, the first argument is, "I am jealous for you with a godly jealousy." So this sense of where he's coming from, why he would boast, why he would move in this deal, has to do with their well-being. "I'm jealous for you. I have this interest in you." And he goes on to explain that. He says, "For I betrothed you to one husband." The devotion, in that sense, why I'm jealous for you, why I care about you, is that I was, I'm the one that married you to Christ. That's where the focus should be, is on Christ. We're in 2 Corinthians chapter 11. And he goes on to give the result, or probably the result in this sense, "so that to Christ I might present you as a pure virgin." So the intent in betrothing them to this one husband, which is now declared to be Christ, is that they might be presented as a pure virgin. So we see this sense of devotion and chastity and so forth in that relationship, to their relationship to Christ. But he gives a contrast in verse 3. "But I am afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness. So now we take it back to a very fundamental point in time that Eve was deceived. That Paul is you know, likening this situation to that. You know, sometimes when you make, well, you definitely hear critics when they make a comparison to something that's too significant, that they'll be criticized for it by comparing something that's so, you know, so significant to this, and those that want to be critical of them will say, well, you know, you're saying this is as big as that. Well, obviously nothing is quite the same as the fall in one sense. But on the other hand, when you think of the relationship, it's very similar. You're talking about your devotion to God, your devotion to Christ, your focus on Christ, you know, being deceived and taken away from that. It's very similar to the sense of the fall. So it has, you know, some definite parallels. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't affect everybody in that sense as the fall did. But it, for this group, it's very much that way. So he says, "But I am afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, your minds will be led astray from the simplicity and purity of devotion to Christ." Well, think about the fall in the sense of Adam and Eve in the garden. I mean, that is a really good description. Everything, not like everything in life was simple, but in terms of their relationship to God, you know, it was, there was a simplicity and purity to that, that relationship. But they were deceived and moved away from that. And that's where our, you know, where, what Paul is saying to the Corinthians as his, you know, as one that has mentored them, one that is in this relationship. It's not really, in one sense, not really as a father at this point, because he's been speaking of one that betrothed them. So in that sense, you know, maybe a father. But, you know, as that the apostle that moved them in that sense of discipleship to say, it's a, the relationship should be about simplicity and purity of devotion. You know, and, you know, at least that sense of devotion is in italics, but that sense of a simplicity and purity in the relationship with Christ. So that's why, you know, it seems appropriate to put in the word devotion. That everything that in that sense of relating to Christ, not that it's life is simple or the Christian life is simple or simplistic, but the oneness in the relationship is simplistic in that sense. That it's, you know, there shouldn't be, you know, in the ideal sense, there's nothing contending for it. But that's what's happened here, is somebody's come along and put something else out. So Paul's first reason for why he would boast, why he would go into this area that he's not comfortable with to say, this is who I am, this is why you should listen to me and not those guys, starts with, I care about you. My concern is not, it's not about myself. My jealousy is about you. That you would be completely focused on Jesus Christ. His second one he gives in verse 4. He says, if one comes and preaches another Jesus, and he's not saying hypothetically one might come, I don't know if they will or won't, but he's talking about what has happened. If and indeed that's what's occurred. Someone comes and preaches another Jesus whom we have not preached, or you received a different spirit which you have not received, or a different gospel which you have not accepted, you bear this beautifully. So at this point he's being, you know, definitely being sarcastic. This is what's going on, that people, that these false apostles, these that have set themselves up as the authority, like apostles or claiming to be apostles, actually at this point we see that it could be, what they're doing could be in the sense of described as they've come and preached another Jesus. You know, those are really strong terms, and I think we have to be careful of labeling people as apostates and that they're, you know, have a message contrary to the gospel. But when it is, when actually what somebody's doing is putting up somebody else in place, it changes it. That's what they're doing. They're claiming it's another Jesus. Obviously, they're saying it's the same Jesus. I think, you know, in this sense, Paul is being sarcastic. That's what they've come. That these false teachers are indeed preaching another Jesus. You know, when you redefine God and keep calling them God, actually, what it is, it's a different God. It's no longer the true God. And you can call, you know, somebody by the name of Jesus, refer to him as Jesus, but if you've redefined him, then it's another Jesus. And I think I've mentioned before, I heard Erwin Lutzer, who's the pastor of Moody Church in Chicago, was several years ago, was at some political thing of the city, and he was seated at a table with this woman that was the pastor of this New Age church in Chicago, big New Age church. And she was speaking at the table and making reference to Jesus. And so Lutzer asked her about it, you know, her references to Jesus. And she goes, oh, well, you have to understand, when I speak of Jesus, I'm talking about the cosmic Jesus. See, she has a totally different definition for who Jesus is. But in a conversation, if we weren't aware, we'd say, oh, you believe in Jesus. Oh, yeah, you know. But the Jesus she believes in is not the same Jesus you believe in. Well, that's the case here. You know, it's another Jesus, he's saying, and a different gospel and a different spirit. And so, you know, one of the reasons Paul is going to make his boast, and one of the reasons Paul is going to, if you would, build himself up, is not for his own well-being, but for the well-being of the Corinthians. And one of the reasons is because you people here at Corinth have been inundated by those that claim to have authority, but yet they're bringing in false teaching. So that's one of the two reasons. The first one being in verse 2, that he cares about them. Number 2 is that there's a false teaching there. And the third one comes in verse 5, for he says, for I consider myself not in the least inferior to the most eminent apostles, or some translations or commentaries might say super apostles. This is the part that you kind of have to make an interpretive decision about. If Paul is continuing to be sarcastic, then he's referring to those false teachers at Corinth, and he's referring to them as super apostles. And so it's you know, there's a derogatory sense of calling them super apostles. That's what they've claimed to be. That's what they're putting themselves up to be. On the other hand, Paul may, in this sense, be referring to the original 12, or those apostles in Jerusalem. And he's not referring to them as the super apostles, but yet he's using the term, a derogatory term by the false teachers. That's what they've referred to them as. So when they refer to the apostles in Jerusalem, they call them the super apostles, you know, in a derogatory sense. And as Paul is coming here, says, I don't consider myself in the least inferior to these, you know. So he's putting himself on par with them in that sense. He says, but even if I am unskilled in speech, and yet, then we start to see some of the criticism against Paul. Somebody would say, well, he's not skilled in speech. Yet, while Paul, at times in places like this, we would have the tendency to say, well, Paul really wasn't a very good speaker. You know, he was a great letter writer, but he wasn't a good speaker. That doesn't fit with what we see in Acts. I mean, Paul was an oratory. You know, he stood up and he debated and he gave these moving messages, you know, and stuff. But I think that's part of the criticism. And Paul is even at this point saying, well, if I'm not as gifted in speech as some of your apostles, if I'm not as gifted in speech as some people, it's almost as he says, well, granted, I'm not, you know, if I'm not, you know, almost. But he moves on and he says, yet I am not so in knowledge. So he, for the sake of argument, Paul's almost like he'd say, well, for the sake of argument, you're right, I'm not as talented as your guys. But when it comes to knowledge, that's another issue. And he says, in fact, in every way, we have made this evident to you in all things. So Paul at this point is, you know, he's not backing down on that one bit at all. And so these become his grounds of arguments for why he will go on and present himself in a positive light. His first is because he is jealous for the Corinthians. He cares about them. He's been, you know, he's invested in them, and with that is, you know, he doesn't like the idea that they're being led astray. Secondly, indeed, they are being led astray. And then third, he's not lacking in knowledge. You know, you can compare him to different things and different people, but he does have the knowledge. He does have that skill. Yes. I think he's being sarcastic.
Okay.
But actually this is here. You got this gospel that, you know, they're bringing this in, and this and this, and then he says, of course you've rejected it. But if they'd rejected it out and right and strongly, this letter wouldn't even be written. Now, not so much that they've bought it because they're still listening to Paul, but they've entertained it. You know, it's that issue. Paul is not really fighting with the false teachers at this point. He's arguing with the Corinthians. And so that means that they're still pliable, if you would. And there are some indications, you know, we saw this in the first half, that they really have responded to Paul in some ways, but yet there's still this issue. So I think that's the way I would take this verse anyway. It does, you know, those things are hard, you know. That's one of the things of ever using sarcasm also, that it makes it prone to misunderstanding.
Never use sarcasm in an email because you can't.
You don't get that tone. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the same, I guess, applies to.
Yeah, and I've gotten myself in trouble many times with sarcasm, which I like to use, but it's sometimes is very deadly. And so it makes it a little hard here, but I think that's what Paul is doing because, you know, I mean, one could interpret this in a positive sense, but it doesn't really. Then you're trying to figure out what is he saying? Why is he saying it then? If he's saying, you know, if that comes and you always reject it, then what's the point? You know, there is some degree that they haven't, you know, just bought into it. But he's already mentioned earlier that he's concerned about them, about being deceived. You know, that is a concern he has because he cares about him, and he has that. But with that, some people think the verse 5 and following is also in that sarcasm that he's referring to the false teachers as super apostles, and that may be the case. But either way, he comes back from that saying that, you know, he is not without his qualifications and knowledge, and which gives the foundation. So we'll just read through the next part, and then we'll look at it more in detail next week, but just to kind of see where he's going. He says, "Or did I commit a sin in humbling myself so that you might be exalted because I preached the gospel to God to you, or preached the gospel of God to you without charge?" Well, definitely being a little sarcastic there, you know. "I robbed other churches by taking wages from them to serve you. And when I was present with you, and was in need, I was not a burden to anyone, for when the brethren came from Macedonia, they fully supplied my need in everything. I kept myself from being a burden to you, and will continue to do so. As the truth of Christ is in me, this boasting of mine will not be stopped in the regions of Achaia. Why? Because I do not love you. God knows I do. But what I am doing, I will continue to do, so that I may cut off opportunity from those who desire an opportunity be regarded, just as we are in the matter about which we are boasting. For such men are false apostles, deceitful workers, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. No wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. Therefore, it is not surprising if his servants also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness, whose end will be according to their deeds. So we see that he gets very strong in that. But he continues some of the sarcasm at the same time through this. But he sets up, why would he boast? Why would he put himself out there? Once again, because I care about you and I'm concerned about you being deceived. Now, sometimes, you know, for us, if I was in that situation, it might be because I'm, you know, I don't like being put down. I invested a lot in you. Why are you doing this? But Paul's investment, you know, is, you know, it's he has a different flavor to it. It's, you know, I put this in you for you. But he also is reminding them through this, and that's why he's boasting. You know, remember, I'm the one that brought the gospel to you. Remember, I'm the one that has done this for you. So the question often becomes, why are you turning on them? But yet we see that from time to time, that people will do that. And not for a real, you know, reason, but because somebody else has, you know, infused false ideas or thoughts or direction to them. Well, anyway, we'll pick that part up and look at that a little more in detail next week as he continues. And then he moves from that, even in the rest of it, as he keeps building upon that same thing of his authority and why he's, you know, he's given us the groundwork, though, why he's going to build on that authority, why he has, you know, why he's the person they should be listening to. And that's a hard one. You can tell it's a hard thing for Paul to do because, on the one hand, Paul is saying people shouldn't be boasting about themselves. But yet, because those at Corinth have boasted so much, the false teachers, Paul is almost forced to come in and say, listen, this is who I am. And so he lays the various groundwork to be able to do that. What are their insights or thoughts or questions? An interesting observation.
Yeah.
That's interesting. You know, and I think the gospel, I think the Christian gospel, in some sense, is in terms of, not, I don't want to say the gospel, but in terms of discipleship, it does suffer from that, as opposed to other religions. You know, sometimes there's a part, you know, to be really impressed with someone of another group because of how zealous they are about it. And I think, you know, we should in some sense be, you know, like if they can be that zealous, why aren't we zealous? But, you know, sometimes, yeah, there's also that point of like, yeah, but they're telling these people that their whole relationship with God and their whole existence and going to heaven or hell is all dependent upon them performing. And so that changes it. But, you know, there is something funny, you know, about that. You know, I've joked before, but I mean, it was very true, but because somebody was saying, I forgot who it was, maybe it was Sunday. I think it was Rob. Did you say you put free out on something and gave it away?
Oh, yeah, television didn't work.
And we used to joke about that in Brenham. If you would put free on something and put it out by the curb, nobody would pick it up. But if you'd put $10, it'd be gone just like that, you know. And So I think there is that sense of, sometimes we see value. That's the part about the Christianity, if you can ever, if people could get their grasp on, is that the value of the sacrifice. It's more precious than silver and gold, and it cannot be bought. And then you see, there is a value, but the value is somebody else paid for it. But yeah, that's a good, interesting observation, Wynn.
The other thing, I'm reading Philandra, which is the second of the science fiction trilogy. The guy goes to Venus, and he's there trying to keep their ease from doing the one thing that she wants to do, which is spend the night on the fixed land, all of it. All the rest of the places to live are islands that float around. And there is Satan is there trying to prevent her from spend the night on the fixed land. And I've read a long time ago, but in reading it now, and just thinking about the path of deceit, and it's not the big thing, usually. It's almost the truth, and yet it's a little bit different.
Mm.
And it just steers us away, step by step.
Like, it's not a sin to think about eating the fruit.
Yeah.
Or,
very, very brief.
It is.
And yet, this would make me think, well, maybe Satan and Eve had long conversations about that, and not just the, did God really say that? And how easy it is for us to deceive ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
The influence around us to deceive us. It's just been really interesting to think about that, and you're talking about him being
That's good.
I realize it's a little bit out of context, but verse 1 in that chapter, might ought to, every groom ought to have that engraved in his wife's ring to remind her. Every groom, read verse 1.
I'll read it.
Okay.
Verse 1 says, I wish you had put up with a little foolishness from me.
Yes. It seems like perfect for me to have inscribed in Wynn's wedding ring. I think it's
the rest of it that's the most telling. But obviously, since you're standing here, you are. What are there any prayer requests?